Welcome back to the Equipping You in Grace podcast. My name is Dave, and I'm one of the co-hosts for this podcast. And with me today, I have Gay Clark, the Director of Women's Initiatives here at Servants of Grace. Gay, it's wonderful to have you back on the podcast, my friend.
It's great to be with you.
And today's topic is sex trafficking. And this is a topic, Gay, that I know you have a lot of experience working in. I know that you also write on this topic for World Magazine. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about, why you write on this topic and just your experience in general with sex trafficking.
Okay. Well, my journey with being involved with sex trafficking started like a lot of people. And that is, I read an article or two that floored me with statistics, circumstances, details, and it made me lose sleep. I couldn't shake the images that article created. And I happen to know of some areas here in our Augusta, Georgia area where that kind of thing occurs. I didn't know what to do at the time. So what I did was I started with driving to those areas, parking my car, and praying. It's all I did for a number of weeks and months because that's all I knew to do. In the journey of doing that, I encountered some traffic victims that I developed a relationship with, and I also met through those connections a woman here who was working with the Georgia Bureau of Investigations and some other folks, local police. She is a direct caregiver of traffic victims, and she is head of a organization called iCare. I attended some educational conferences that she led and further equipped myself in that regard, began doing things that she needed to have done as they needed to be done, began working with some of the young women that she and her organization work with. That's kind of how I got into it. Shortly after I did that, I was involved in the World Magazine's mid-year career course, which they offer once a year. Told Marvin Olasky that I've had some experience working with a volunteer organization that helps sex trafficking victims. And he was very interested and said that, you know, that was something he wanted to expand coverage on at World Magazine. So I began writing more for World Magazine on the subject, which meant I had to research more. So I began also to learn even more than I already knew about trafficking, because some of the articles and stories that came up had with them questions I needed to answer and pursue.
Yeah, you raise a couple of interesting things there. As you were writing and researching sex trafficking, what are some things that stood out to you?
A number of things stood out to me. One is how young some of these victims were, as young as 8 and 9 years old now, some of these girls that are victims of sex trafficking. So that stood out to me. Another thing is how pervasive it is. You know, if you Google the phrase, "it happens here" and - sex trafficking, you will find a plethora of articles in nearly every city you can name. And I would assure you that sex trafficking is happening in just about every city you can name in the United States, including yours. Small little sleepy suburbs to big iconic cities like New York City. It's fairly pervasive. Another thing that I found floored me and I followed fairly closely was the online ad agency called Backpage. A lot of people aren't familiar with Backpage. Backpage is similar to Craigslist. It's an online advertising agency that sells boats and cars and things like that. But they have notoriously lately become famous for selling children. I have written about that specifically at the Gospel Coalition and through a series of articles that I chronicled on World Magazine. Backpage sells 1 million sex ads worldwide every single day. And since it's a well-known ad agency, it's the go-to place that many Johns or people who are pursuing purchasing a child go to purchase a child for sex. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, when they receive reports of children children who've been sex trafficked or sexually abused, approximately 75% of those reports have their origin in Backpage.com. Mm. Despite the fact that they are advertising illegal activity, the sale of children for sex, they have managed to evade the court system at almost every turn.
Yeah, that's just very sad. I've had friends here in Boise that have engaged in ministry specifically in this area through a ministry called Destiny Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Have you heard of that before?
I have not.
So they're like in Cambodia and Malaysia, and there's another ministry that one of my friends is involved in, Tiny Hands International, and they're in Ethiopia and I think a few other places, and it's just, you know, it's very, very sad. It's not just a out there kind of problem, as you're saying. It's here in every city. And just want to make a quick two plugs here while we're chatting about the seriousness of this. One of the reasons why we did an issue of Theology for Life, this is probably like a year or so ago now, on pornography, purity, and sex trafficking is because it's such a big issue, as Gay is saying. We also, James interviewed me on, James Forbes, the other co-host for Coping You in Grace, interviewed me on pornography, purity, and sex trafficking. We talked about these things in a more theological perspective. So I would encourage you, we'll put those in the show notes so you can check that out for more information. What is iCare?
iCare is the local volunteer group that works closely with all the different agencies in Augusta to help victims of sex trafficking get out of that kind of situation and into a much more life-giving, productive situation. So they work with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. After there's different police stings and victims are recovered, they are often placed in the care of iCare. So, and then the iCare is kind of the person or the vehicle that tries to gather all the different resources, and there are many, many resources that a sex trafficking victim might need, from medical to counseling, anything you can name. They might have many, many needs, and iCare is facilitating getting those things together. They're also in the process of building a home called River Tree, which will be a home to young women and also, if needed, their children. Here in the Augusta area, we have found that a lot of sex traffickers are now targeting young women who have children because they can control a mother through her kids. If you think your children are going to be harmed if you don't do something, many a mom will do something they normally would not if their child's safety is at risk. So, and a lot of those young women who have children will not come out of the life because there's nowhere for their children to be, or if it may be that they'll be separated from their children, so that tends to influence them negatively as far as receiving help.
How can churches get involved in the work of preventing sex trafficking?
Well, I think first and foremost, they can pray. When you begin to pray, God begins to move. Impossible for me to speak intelligently into every way God is working and moving in different cities across the country, but I think that's the first thing you start with. And then secondly, as you start to take action, the best thing to do is find out who is working with sex traffic victims in your area already. And some people might be inclined to say, well, no one. And that, I don't assume that, because simply because you're not being made aware of it doesn't mean it's not happening. Sex traffic victims have a profound need for confidentiality for their safety's sake. So a lot of organizations that help sex traffic victims have to fly under the radar constantly, and they're not at liberty to announce all the things they are doing. So a church that wants to get involved in helping victims of sex trafficking might contact their local police, particularly the ones that have units that are specializing in this area, and ask them to direct them to organizations that they're working with to help sex trafficking victims. One of the things that happens in this area that's not been helpful is that there have been a lot of people who want to continue to reinvent the wheel rather than come alongside someone who is already doing good work. Instead of trying to start your own brand new ministry helping sex trafficking victims, the better thing to do is find out who is already doing that, even if it's a secular organization, and see how you might serve them, how you might come alongside them and be an encouragement. Maybe they have a safe home that needs resources that you can provide. There's any number of ways in that regard, but that would be the most effective way to start with, is through your local police agencies that actually involved in that, asking who are your go-to folks. And if they say, gee, we really don't have anyone right now doing that, then that's the time to start your own group. But for the most part, the best thing to do is, if there are people already in place doing this kind of work, probably the most helpful thing you can do is try to come alongside them in any way you can.
What are some challenges to helping victims of sex trafficking?
Well, a couple of things. One is, you know, these victims need profound confidentiality. I've often said that they are more secret than the secrets of a nuclear submarine, because these girls, when they are coming out of this life, cannot be photographed and put on Facebook. You can't share in an open, even sometimes openly in church. You can't tell their stories for many years to come, because it would put them at jeopardy. So that's kind of hard to raise funds and garner support if you have to be careful how you share stories. The other thing can happen in sharing stories of victims too soon and too early is you re-victimize the young woman again by doing that. The other thing that's tricky in this situation is trauma, which is something we are just now beginning to understand, a very difficult experience that they have of trauma, leads some of these girls to do some irrational things for those of us who've not been exposed to trauma. A lot of these girls come out of their situation only to what seems to be voluntarily returned. One of the biggest questions that's often asked in these circumstances is, why don't these girls just run away and leave? But when somebody alternates love, care, and attention that person's been lacking with punishment, harsh punishment, abuse, what happens psychologically to a person who's exposed to that for not too long a period of time is a trauma bond forms. And while on the one hand they are in an unbearable, impossible situation, in another frame, they find it impossible to know how to leave it. So these folks need specialized care. They need to see counselors who have what we call trauma-informed training, because it's very, very difficult to break those bonds that have been formed, and to help them think rationally about their circumstances and their situations.
Because they likely identify with their captors.
Right, right. Exactly. So the other thing that happens is, you know, to care for someone who's been involved and violated so profoundly and consistently for years takes an enormous amount of resources. And so the very few safe homes that are out there nationwide, most of them have faced enormous adversity in being built and maintaining their funding that they need, because they can't always be open with the circumstances they encounter, the challenges they face, a public demanding answers or firm return on their investment. May see girls who return back to the life, they may translate that into, oh, well, these people don't know what they're doing. So it's a very, very hard soil to till. It's like trying to bust open concrete with a straight pin. It's a very, very challenging environment.
You were touching on that the back page and the website there earlier, and I know you mentioned as we were preparing to record here today, the movie I Am Jane Doe. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that documentary?
I Am Jane Doe does a superb job of chronicling how young women are caught up in this lifestyle and then trafficked on this website, and the court battles that have been fought to hold Backpage accountable for their behavior. I will say, for those who you can download this movie or see it through Netflix and iTunes and other outlets like that, if you just Google I Am Jane Doe. For those of you, though, I would caution that there is a brief moment or two in there when a gentleman is talking about his addiction to pornography, where there's a fair amount of detail, so it could be a trigger concern for those who are dealing with pornography. But that aside, this documentary chronicles some couple of young women that are teenagers who, one ran away, and within 24 hours of running away, a pimp found her and advertised her on Backpage. And Backpage is so pervasive and so well known among those who would purchase young children for sex that as soon as an article is posted for a child on Backpage, that phone number, that contact number starts ringing off the hook. It's fairly daunting thing to get your hands around that that's actually occurring. But a lot of these young women are runaways. A lot of them are running from something. Maybe it's abuse that they were experiencing at home or in a foster care situation. And those traffickers know where to go to find these young runaways. Maybe it's a bus stop or a mall or any other place. Not all of them are runaways, but a vast majority are runaways. And Backpage been complicit with these sex traffickers by helping them to craft advertising that will evade police. You ask just about any policeman about who works in this area about the things that they operate on. One of the first places they go to is Backpage. If a parent comes to the police and says, my daughter has been missing for a couple of days, one of the first places the police will go to try to find her is Backpage.com. And often, sadly, he will find her there.
This kind of raises the next question. How can parents prevent their child from being caught up in sex trafficking?
A number of things. There is another organization, national organization, called Shared Hope. And they have an excellent video that they use for middle school and high school girls that has the testimony of one young woman who was nearly trafficked. She was pursued by a trafficker unbeknownst to her. She just thought it was a very handsome young fellow who was interested in her romantically, and she was totally taken in until some other friends of hers caught on to what was going on and intercepted that situation. So Shared Hope representatives all over the United States will share that video with students, and in order to educate them, it's got just enough information to arm children with helpful information, but not to unnecessarily alarm them. So you can go to Shared Hope and you can purchase that short video yourself or request a speaker, and they can help find a speaker who can come speak to your parents' group, your Bible study group, your school group. I've had requests to speak all sorts of places, and I'm delighted to do so when I can. But that would be one thing. The second thing I would say is be very aware of what your kids are doing online, particularly on their cell phones with some of these apps. Snapchat and Facebook and some other places are now being populated by traffickers who are able to smell a vulnerable young woman a mile away and lure her in, and particularly with the anonymity that social media creates, that trafficker can pose as a just concerned, handsome boyfriend or would-be boyfriend or any number of people to gain that young woman's trust. And parents need to be aware of what their kids are doing online. My personal conviction is that middle school girls in particular have absolutely no business owning a smartphone. All the reasons people, quote, need a smartphone, they can do with a, quote, dumb phone. They do not need a smartphone. That smartphone will cause them more harm than not. And we go out of our way to protect our kids in all kinds of ways, and we tell them when they need to be home and where they need to be and to lock the doors and all the rest. But when you're putting a smartphone in the hands of a middle schooler, particularly a young woman, you are putting her in great jeopardy.
Why is that?
Again, because these traffickers are master manipulators. They can convince a young woman that they are a young boyfriend very interested in them, often gain their trust by reading some Facebook post that the young woman has posted. They garner a lot of information from those young women, from the Facebook posts that they have. They can find out where they live, what school they go to, just like Facebook itself has done. An enormous amount of PR, of intel that they have on us by just having a Facebook post. I'm not saying that the kids cannot engage in social media at all. I'm not at all saying that. but they need to do it wisely and with the guidance of some trusted adult.
Well, that's really wise. And I guess wrapping it up, what is the connection between pornography and sex trafficking?
Pornography is the seed that has indeed created the harvest that is sex trafficking. Pornography is now a national epidemic. It's a health epidemic. It's destroying lives everywhere it's found. The pervasive nature of pornography, and you may have discussed this in your podcast a year ago, but the pervasive nature of pornography is you don't necessarily have to look for pornography. It can come find, it can find you. That's why, again, related to this, computers for teenagers, middle school and high school, if your kid has a computer in his bedroom, you are out of your mind. They need to be in a public place where you can see what's going on, because oftentimes these different pornography sites can be accessed accidentally, and it can throw a child completely off guard because they don't know what they're encountering and why. The number of folks that have become addicted to pornography, it's just like any other addiction. It requires greater and greater attention, greater and greater dosages. And so at some point, for a lot of folks, watching a video is just not enough anymore. They want to pursue something real. And Backpage.com is there to help any gentleman or woman who is interested in buying a child for sex. They can order one online, much like we order pizza online.
I think that this, both pornography and sex trafficking, provide a very serious opportunity for the church, not only to speak but to act in a gospel, yeah, in a gospel fashion to this issue, to minister, because everything that you've said is all things that the church is supposed to do: walk alongside, care, show compassion, pray, teach, instruct, counsel. All of that is how the church is supposed to function. A healthy church is supposed to function. My thought there is do pray, but realize that the need is great, and you know, God may call you to act as well in that if you're already praying for that. But I encourage everybody just to start praying and to see where the Lord would lead them to be involved and to follow what Gay has said, because she has a lot of experience. Gay, do you have any final thoughts that you want to share about this topic?
I'll say, for anyone who is praying and wants to get involved, again, is very, very important that you be willing to learn as much as you can about this subject before you become involved in helping. It is not something that you can just roll up your sleeves and join in the fight. It's a very complex issue. The women that have been caught up in this are very complex, harmed individuals that require strategic, specialized care, and it would behoove you to get as much training and information as you can about the subject from people who've been doing it and know a lot about it in your area, to inform you into how to help in a way that actually helps and doesn't harm.
Okay, this has been a very helpful conversation. Even for me, I would say that I'm not a newbie to this discussion, but I'm not as advanced either as you, so in knowledge and understanding. So I very much appreciate what you've shared here today, very, very much, and I know that it's going to help our listeners. And so thank you for continuing to speak to issues that truly do matter and impact people's lives.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Equipping You in Grace. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a rating on iTunes and share it across your social media outlets. I want to thank you once again for listening to this episode. Until next time, may the Lord richly bless you and keep you.